Okay, we're going to talk politics. Specifically, we're going to talk about the strategy of wooing superdelegates in the Democratic presidential primary. Each primary or caucus won is a pledged delegate gained. And on the heels of his Wyoming victory Saturday, Barack Obama leads the count with 1,368 delegates over Hillary Clinton's 1,226. Those are regular delegates, okay? And the numbers are according to NPR's count. But in a race this close, it's likely the two candidates could reach the end of the primary season this June, both shy of the 2,025 delegates they need to win the party nomination. A delegate deadlock that can only be broken by the so-called superdelegates, Democratic Party bigwigs who could decide the race on the floor of the National Convention this August in Denver. So far, by NPR's numbers, Clinton's got the backing of 242 of them. Obama has 210. Still up for grabs, 26 superdelegates belonging to John Edwards and 60 undecideds. And bear in mind, the supers, of course, have the right to change their minds. Joining us now to talk strategy on how the candidates can woo these power delegates is Jim Miller. He's an associate professor of economics at Smith College and author of Game Theory at Work, How to Use Game Theory to Outthink and Outmaneuver Your Competition. Hey, Jim.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Doing just fine. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, sure.
So game theory, it's about strategy, plotting out the best behavior to achieve a desired outcome and all the while anticipating your opponent's moves. So let's break down a game theory strategy for securing superdelegates. What should the first step be?
Okay. Well, the strategies could be very different for Clinton and Obama because Clinton is likely to be behind in the delegate in the pledged delegate count by the time of the convention. So what Obama should optimally do is sort of convince the party that, hey, if I don't get the nomination won't be worth anything because my strong supporters will feel cheated. So I think this is why Hillary Clinton is making a big deal right now about a dream ticket where Obama would be her VP, because she wants to convince the superdelegates, look, if you decide to go, you know, against what the majority of the automatic delegates wanted, it won't destroy the party. So I think Obama would be very smart right now to say, oh, I would never take the vice presidential slot.
Which he's saying, isn't he? Or at least that it's premature.
Yeah, he's saying it's premature. I think he might be better off saying I would never take it. I think he also would benefit. One of his advisors called Hillary Clinton a monster a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm. Smelt the power. Mm-hmm.
And I think this was perceived in the media as, you know, a mistake. I think this is actually, they probably didn't do it deliberately, but if it was done deliberately, it was a very good strategy because it's a way of signaling to the superdelegates, hey, my people really, really hate the Clintons. And so if I get a majority of the delegates in the election, in the primaries, my people will never, never support Hillary Clinton, and so she'll lose the nomination.
Hmm.
You can argue that both candidates are going for a prize, and I think Obama has a chance to poison the prize if he wants to, if he doesn't get it.
But doesn't that run counter to his whole mantle of being a different kind of politician who's running a different kind of race?
You're absolutely right. It definitely does. So this is why he probably has to work through surrogates. And I think this is an advantage that Hillary Clinton has because he can't at least appear to play this strategy.
Interesting. Okay, so let's talk about the risks specifically. What's the biggest gamble each candidate could make? What would be a good gamble, a good risk to get the desired outcome?
A good risk. That's sort of a hard question. I think for Obama, as I said before, he has to convince the party that, you know, he may run as a third party candidate or wouldn't support Hillary Clinton.
Would he actually come out and say, I will not back her if she is the nominee?
I think it would be dangerous for him to do that, but I think his surrogates could by, for example, calling her a monster and insulting her in other ways.
What?
He also could be clever and say, oh, you know, some people have suggested I run as a third-party candidate. I can't imagine doing that, mm-hmm. which would put in the air that he might do it.
What about Michigan and Florida? What's the game theory associated with those undecided delegates, whether or not they're going to actually be seated or whether or not they're going to hold a primary?
Mm-hmm.
What are you thinking about that?
Well, I think here, Obama's in a difficult situation because he obviously benefits if the two state delegations don't have any votes at the convention. But given what the Democrats perceived happened in 2000, it's difficult for Obama to say, oh, I don't think, you know, Floridians should have any influence at the convention. So he would, again, he wants to play a double game if he could, where he, you know, publicly talk about counting every vote, but yet have his people sort of never quite come to any agreement with the Clintons and with the Democratic National Party, so nothing actually happens.
Sounds vague and difficult.
It does. Would Hillary Clinton, I don't know if she could pull this off, but would be the best for her would be to have one or both primaries be winner take all, where if you get like one more vote than your opponent, you get all the delegates. I don't know if that would violate Democratic rules or not, but if she could sort of slip that in, that would mean it would be enough if she won both primaries that she would easily have a majority of the pledged delegates.
Let's talk about the superdelegates themselves. There's some game theory that can be applied to their decision-making process, right?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of people in the media have been falsely saying that, gee, the superdelegates are going to do what's best for the party. That's true to some extent, but they also have their own interests at stake. I mean, again, if you support one candidate and he or she becomes president, that person can really reward you, and they can also punish you if you don't support them. So what's going on is I think a candidate will gain an advantage if they're perceived as being a vindictive person.
Really?
I mean, imagine you're deciding between two people to support. You know that one of the people really goes after his or her enemies while the other forgives. You're going to be more likely to go after, to support the person who crushes their enemies.
That is – and who does that advantage, if anyone?
Well, at least by the popular perception, Clinton is, perceived as being much tougher and, a much stronger fighter, while Obama at least, has the appearance of being someone who would forgive. So this really benefits Clinton.
And we're going to wrap it up with where we started, essentially talking about the vice presidential slot and the notion that this is a zero-sum game. I mean, she is suggesting that she'd be open to this, but is it really a zero-sum game for these candidates?
Well, no, it's not a zero-sum game because, both are young enough where they have a chance of running for president or being president 4 or 8 years from now. So they both need to take into account that, even if I lose now, I still have a chance in the future of becoming president.
Okay, well, this is definitely a fascinating, fascinating election. We'll probably check back with you. Jim Miller, Associate Professor of Economics at Smith College and author of Game Theory at Work, How to Use Game Theory to Outthink and Outmaneuver Your Competition. Hey, thanks, Jim.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Hey, stay with us. Coming up, what's the deal with Mississippi voters? Who are they? What do they care about? The spotlight's on them tomorrow. We'll learn all about that fair state right here on the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.